broadcasting from the shores of El Pacifico, Phil Hendry.
If they want to compete in the marketplace,
you may be witnessing history here.
Making it through a full 24 hours.
I think the difference ultimately comes down
to... I'm just humiliated. You know what? This is ridiculous.
I felt this thrill going up my leg.
This is a real live stuff.
World famous Phil Hendry Show. God bless you, Billy. God bless you. Welcome to the world famous Phil Hendry Show.
This is a real live stuff.
Every night till 1 o'clock on the West Coast, 4 a.m. on the East Coast, a news talk and entertainment show that knows what it's talking about. Where truth is our bitch, and through the looking glass we go each and every night. A Tea Party candidate in Dallas says a violent overthrow of the government is on the table. All right. Some conservatives want to defund, that is as in D-E-F-U-N-D, not defend, defund NPR. Lindsay Lohan is ordered to stay in rehab, but can she afford it? Tonight we're going to be talking with Raj Fanin about the Juan Williams firing at NPR and his subsequent $2 million contract from Fox. And we have coming up in this segment a very good friend of ours, Doug Danger, who is a writer with the Orange County Courier, and is going to be talking to us about something. He's going to be talking with us in general terms about surviving, swimming or surfing in shark-infested waters. Now, today we had a terrible story in Southern California of a young man, a student at UC Santa Barbara, a resident of Riverside, a young guy that was cited by the County of Riverside as a lifeguard 3 years ago, saving the life of a young person in one of the county pools. His name is Lucas McCain Ransom, R-A-N-S-O-M, Lucas McCain Ransom from Romoland in Riverside, California, in Riverside County, I should say. He was surfing this morning off a surf beach in Santa Barbara between 9 a.m. and 9:30 when he was attacked by a shark. It apparently, the shark bit enough of a chunk of his leg off that the young man started bleeding to death. He was in the water with a friend of his, Matthew Garcia. He says he was only 2 feet from Ransom, Mr. Garcia said, when the shark rose out of the water without warning. He said it happened very fast. They were pounded by waves looking for Luke Ransom, and they found him because his board was strapped to his leg. He was not on a surfboard. He was on a bodyboard, on a boogie board, which you typically will lay flat on. They finally got him to shore. They performed CPR. Matthew Garcia is apparently proficient, or at least is knowledgeable enough with CPR to have begun applying it, but it was too late. He had bled to death because of this bite, you know, in the leg. According to a spokeswoman at nearby Vandenberg Air Force Base, so this is up the coast from us, not too far away from where we sit in our radio studios, maybe 20 miles. Vandenberg Air Force Base is out on the coast near Lompoc. The officials there at Vandenberg have closed Surf, Wall, and Minuteman beaches for 72 hours. So I guess Vandenberg Air Force Base controls some of the public beach up there, as perhaps maybe the Marines do south of Los Angeles around Camp Pendleton. Surf Beach is located north of Santa Barbara, west of Lompoc. It is directly on the Vandenberg Air Force Base. Shark sightings reportedly are common off of Surf Beach, but... this kind of an attack is rare. In 2003, there was a great white shark that killed a woman as she was swimming off of Avila Beach, about 30 miles north of Vandenberg. And in 2008, David Martin, a triathlete, bled to death after a great white shark attacked him. But these are not stories of sharks consuming human beings. These are stories of sharks attacking, biting, and biting in such a way so as to cause this massive loss of blood. And today... was the latest, 19-year-old UC Santa Barbara student Lucas McCain Ransom from Riverside, California. And that's a drag. And it is unfortunate, too, because it is rare, and it seems like it is such a, I don't know, lottery ticket. You know, you don't know when this is going to happen. I don't want to talk about this fatal attack. Let's put that to the side. We'll let the authorities and let people speculate. Doug Danger is joining us from the Orange County Courier, though, to talk about shark attack in general. Doug, you're an entertainment writer. Have you ever written about, nature, wild animals?
On occasion, Joe, when I was first coming up in news media, in the newspaper business, I took any job they gave me, and I certainly had done my fair share of writing about certainly here in Southern California, we've got coyotes coming out of the mountain, mountain lions coming out of the mountains, things like that. And some pieces that we did on the desert life. But out here in the waters off of Southern California, we do have a shark population, as they do off the coast of Florida. And we've got young people, old people, all kinds of people who go out and surf. Now, the reason why I'm talking about surfing is because sharks will oftentimes, we are told, see a surfer on a surfboard from underwater, and he looks a little bit like either a seal, a sea lion, or
like a tortoise, or what do you call it?
A giant sea turtle. And so the shark will attack, thinking that that is the creature that he is attacking, and he comes to find out that is not the case. It is a different animal entirely. It's a human being. And so the shark breaks off the attack. And this always happens. You never see a shark go into any kind of a feeding frenzy on a human being. And I'm not an expert, but I dare say I would be backed up by experts. You do see sharks go into a frenzy when they have attacked a sea lion or a seal. But I don't think you see them go into this kind of feeding frenzy when they have hit a human being. I think it is almost as if it was a mistake, almost as if the animal was confused by something, and so the human being is attacked. So you're very right, Phil, about the bleeding being the cause, more often than not, of the death of human beings from shark attack. Now, I'm a gay man and a gay journalist. I came out 6 weeks ago, and I've been very, very blessed in that, even though it's been a long, hard road coming out and being openly gay, I have been blessed in that being in the closet for as long as I was able to see how, people act. And now that I'm out of the closet, I can also see how people act and be a little bit more courageous with my actions. That's why coming up on Monday, I will be out at Surf Beach on a board, and I'm going to be applying what I have been theorizing and writing about, which is surfing with authority, which is being human with authority.
And all right, this surfing with authority is something that you theorized or wrote about at one time because why?
Because of this very thing, because of shark attack. Because I think human beings get out in the water, and the first thing they forget, I think human beings forget this anytime they're in the wild. They always forget that they're human beings. They always forget that they are much more intelligent and strike a much more fearsome pose than any animal. And a human being can scare any animal, literally scare any animal. But you take a look at the largest mammal on Earth, which is the whale. And we have a couple of whales in tanks down here at SeaWorld doing whatever it is we tell them to do. I think that pretty much...
All right, but I understand what you're saying. I mean, there's no doubt that the human animal has dominated this planet as no other animal has been able to, and we certainly that's all we know, though, in the cycle of life, in the family of life, isn't it? That humans are predominant on the planet Earth, but we don't know really much about life beyond that.
Well, you're getting into life on other planets, and
that's exactly right. So what are you saying? Surfing with authority is
surfing with authority. Is getting out on that board, getting out on a boogie board, getting out on a body board, and just being human, being aggressive, taking that, paddling out, looking at that wave, and be human to the point where any shark that is swimming around, even if it looks like you're a turtle, or it looks like you're a seal, or it looks like no shark is going to have the guts, really, to attack you. Now, Phil, I want to mention one other story here.
All right, hold on. Our number is 877-876-PHIL, 877-876-PHIL, and we're talking to Doug Danger here from the Orange County Courier about surfing with authority so that you don't get attacked by a shark. The shark is sensing this?
Well, let me give you this story here, because it was one that I saw the other night, and I wanted to mention it to you. Animals, according to this woman, Patrice Ryan, and also according to Sonia Fitzpatrick, who's a pet psychic, animals feel humiliation. Animals feel humiliation. They can be embarrassed. They can feel stupid if they're wearing a costume that a human being has put on them, some ridiculous hat. I think we've all seen animals this way. Well, if that's true, and I happen to think it is true, then they can also want to back off of a situation. Be afraid.
Well, they can feel fear. We know that animals feel fear.
But more than that, they feel not only fear, but they feel, what's the word I want to look at? They don't want to look bad in another way. It's not that they have to wear a monkey costume or something like that. They don't want to look bad tangling with a human being if they know it's a human being. And the only way a shark's going to know you're a human, if you're out there surfing with authority and with, you're just a human. Okay.
I don't know how you do that, man.
Well, you do it by going out and not worrying about sharks. You own that water. You own that water.
Now, you claim you're going to go out and surf that beach on Monday.
That is exactly right.
Okay, and you're going to do that. Is that you're going to be doing that after they open the beach?
Right. Now, the shark is not going to come near you if it knows you're surfing with authority, with intention. You have to understand this. You could have a huge gash. You could be bleeding into the water. Bleeding directly into the ocean. But if you have authority in your surfing, the shark will leave you alone. I'm not an expert on this, but as a gay man, as a gay journalist, and an individual who has, I've walked, you know, in the shoes, I've walked long, hard road of being discriminated against, you could bleed into the water like a stuck pig. And no shark is going to have the sheer guts to come near you because they know that's a human. I go near that, and I'm going to be hanging from a hook in about 30 minutes, upside down with my guts pouring out onto the deck.
877-876-PHIL, talking with Doug Danger from the Orange County Courier on how to surf or swim, I guess, Doug, with authority. Now, you're going to be going out there on Monday. What happens, Doug, and God forbid, what happens if you are, and I don't know, I don't want to get people scared, but perhaps there's a, you know, some sort of a weather pattern that has the sharks feeding over there for the next week or so. What happens if you get struck by a shark?
Well, we're going to have spotters. I mean, I'll have probably about five to ten spotters on the water. We'll have five or ten in four boats. I'm going to have, if I can, I'll get some Coast Guard with some overhead. So,
Wait. You're going to have spotters.
Yeah, but I'm going to have spotters out there. So in case a shark does decide to go ahead and give it a try and come at me, they'll alert me. I've got a whistle. I'll blow the whistle and tell them, you better get me out of here. And when I say get me out of here, I mean now. So that's going to happen. But the fact is, I'm going to be surfing with authority.
Wait a minute. You know, you're going to be out there surfing with authority. You're going to be out there proving this point that if you're really human, even if you're bleeding into the water, no shark is going to come near you, but you have spotters.
I have spotters, yes. In case a shark decides to come at me, I'm not going to get hurt because I surf with authority. I'll swim right into the middle of a family of sharks, and I'll be okay. But I just want to know where they are. And if they, for whatever reason, they might be mentally retarded. You know, I don't know, Phil. Maybe they want to die. Maybe they want to end up on the end of a hook. But if they're coming at me, I need for someone to radio me. I'll blow the whistle so that the people in the boats can come get me. And like I said, they better do it. But
do you anticipate being hit by a shark?
No, I do not. I'm going to be surfing with authority.
Then why do you have spotters? Why do you have the Coast Guard? Why?
In case, as I said, there's an animal out there that is it's to be safe. I'm a gay man and a gay journalist, all right? I need spotters in case I encounter a shark that is, let's face it, if you could have a mentally retarded shark, we've got people that are mentally retarded. You could have a mentally retarded shark. So I need spotters.
In case there's a mentally retarded shark.
Bill, I'm not trying to lean on that term. What I'm trying to tell you is my theory on surfing with authority and surfing as a human, there won't be any shark attacks, so don't worry about it.
All right, if there's no shark attack, I'm just wondering why you're going to have spotters out there. And
you know, I wish you wouldn't keep leaning on that. For obvious reasons, Phil, in case there's
a retarded shark.
Well, you know something? Now what's happening is I'm getting angry. And
all right, Doug, I'm sorry, but I do have to ask questions.
I'm the journalist. I'm the gay man and a gay journalist. You're not a journalist. You're a talk show host. The questions, the good questions that need to be asked, I know what they are. And I love you and respect you, Phil, but you haven't asked no good questions. I'm a gay man and a gay journalist. I'd prefer we say, you know, we could say a shark with some kind of a brain a Down syndrome for sharks or something. I don't know.
Well, I don't know if the, if shark.
If you look at a shark, if it has the, if it looks like a, I was going to say like an Asian shark, but I guess.
All right, hold on for a minute. 877-876-PHIL. Talking to Doug Danger about sharks and being in the water with sharks, and he feels surfing with authority, that is swimming with authority, that's being a human in the water and emanating your humanness, frightens away or turns away any shark. It's that when we get in the water, he says, and we put off this vibe of vulnerableness. He mentioned that Sonia Fitzpatrick says that, well, animals can be embarrassed, and a shark can be wary and not wanting to look like a fool will turn away from attacking a human. 877-876-PHIL, 877-876-PHIL. Doug Danger is going to go out there on Monday after they open the beaches back up and surf with authority. The world-famous Phil Hendry Show will be back with Doug Danger in a moment.
Phil Hendry.
I didn't say a shark with Down syndrome, but a shark that looks like a Mongolian shark.
You're listening to the world-famous Phil Hendry Show.
With me is Doug Danger. We're talking, Doug is a writer for the Orange County Courier, mostly an entertainment writer, but we're talking about the theory of people being in the water with human authority, and sharks will not be attracted to attacking. Sharks are not feeding on humans. Sharks are hitting humans by mistake, right?
Well, mostly that's what we're told, and I think that's true. So that shows you right there that sharks are already not really oriented well. So if you're out in the water and you are being a human being with a surfboard, with a paddleboard, with, I don't know what it is, you may just be body surfing. Sharks got no business being anywhere around you. First of all, there's nothing there to eat. Okay? Would you agree with that or not, Phil? I'm a gay man and a gay journalist, and I know that. Would you agree with that?
There's nothing there to eat for what?
For the shark.
Well, I don't know anything about sharks.
Well, let me explain something, Phil. Sharks eat seals and sea lions, and when there are humans in the water, there's not a whole lot of seals and sea lions around. It's only humans. So there's nothing for the shark to eat when there are humans in the water. So any shark that goes in after a human is not very intelligent. So you already got that on your side. And if you're in that water with authority, I don't know how to explain it.
All right, you're in the water with authority, but I wonder how much authority you can really feel when you are in the water with authority and you have... at your disposal, you have people that are spotting that...
I've already explained that to you. I'm perfectly confident. I don't need spotters.
Then why do you have spotters out there, and you've got a whistle?
Yes, I have a whistle.
And what's that for?
To let them know if I see a shark, and then we call off the operation.
877-876-PHIL. Let me go to a phone call, and we'll take some more phone calls, of course, this evening, folks. But we're talking with Doug here about shark attacks. Steve in Tampa, you're on the Phil Hendry Show. Go ahead.
Yeah, I mean, you're some of your arguments are fallacy. I mean, we commercial fish in Florida and on both sides of the state. And you brought up the fact about because they have a whale at SeaWorld. Well, first of all, that's a mammal. Shark is not a mammal. You can't train a fish like you can a mammal. That's two different species of animals. You're not going to see anybody get in the pool at SeaWorld with a great white and get him to jump out of the water and ring a bell.
No, I'm not trying to do that. What I am doing though is I'm making it real clear. I'm not going to try to do that. What I am trying to do though is make it clear to the shark that I'm a human. It's just a dumb thing that eats garbage. You know, that'll back him off.
Most of you are right in one thing. It is a case of mistaken identity. The shark is not dumb. The person is on top of a board, in which makes him look like the shark's food.
Now, you don't.
He thinks it's a seal or a turtle, right?
The shark is going to feel like an idiot after it does that.
The shark doesn't feel like an idiot. It's just not what he wants to eat.
Well, right, but he doesn't. Let me ask you a question, sir. Does a shark know what a natural enemy is as opposed to a food source? Of course it does, right? Shark's not going to attack something that it thinks is an enemy. you come into the water as human, as man, you let that shark know, it, you know, it just made the biggest mistake of its life. It's trying to find something to eat where you surf. That's my point, Phil.
All right, we'll be back. 877-876-PHIL. Doug Danger on Surfing with Authority and Keeping Sharks Away on a world-famous Phil Hendry show.
Phil Hendry.
The shark doesn't want to feel like a jackass.
Phil Hendry Show.
877-876-PHIL. And welcome back here to the world-famous Phil Hendry Show. And on the line with us from Orange County, California, is Doug Danger. And by the way, I have failed to mention our website, philhendryshow.com, where you can be watching right now if you'd like live streaming video of our show, as well as listening to the audio of the show and generally watching us perform the show. The only radio show in the world that's actually worth watching, philhendryshow.com. And let me just turn this thing off here. I have a little fan on. Doug, so really what we're talking about here is you going out on Monday now and testing this theory of surfing with authority. And before we get to some calls, I still feel you need to clear up this idea that you're going to have spotters.
Well, you know, Phil, you know, I'm a gay man and a gay journalist, all right? And you've known me all my life. I've got no need for spotters. I have spotters out there because the paper I work for feels that I am very valuable to them, and so they want to make sure that I don't get attacked by a shark and otherwise am turned into, you know, am rendered dead, I guess the word. But so I think that's why I've got spotters.
Yeah, but you've got a whistle that you're going to blow in case you see one.
Well, I've got to get out of the water. And the only reason, as I mentioned to you, if I am attacked, is only even if I'm using this, my human authority, is if it is a shark that is damaged somehow, its neurons, it is mentally a aberrant animal. It's a retard of a shark, if that's what you want to call it.
All right, what about people that are in the water that don't have spotters and they use this human authority and this humanness and they come up against an animal like that?
It's a million to one shot, Phil. It's a million to one.
And then why do you have spotters and the Coast Guard?
Because I am a valuable commodity to my newspaper. I write about entertainment. It's not like I have another kind of a job where other people can do it. There are very few people that can do what I do. I'm a writer. I'm an entertainment writer.
All right, 877-876-PHIL.
All right, can I mention one thing, Phil, before we go to phone calls?
Go ahead.
In order to show your humanness and how, you know, how human you are and how superior you are, you can get shark steak and literally barbecue a shark steak the night before. I'm going to have a shark steak on Sunday night. And why am I going to do that? The reason I'm going to do that is I will have eaten a shark, and I'll be out there in the water, and I'll tell you, well, I almost feel sorry for the sharks that are going to be in the water with me on Monday, because I will be out there on my board, and I had just eaten one of them. Now, what are they going to do to top that?
Eat you?
They don't eat me. They don't eat humans. Don't you understand? Don't you know what's going on here? You don't get the time, what time it is out on the street, do you?
I know what time it is out on the street. In other words, what you're saying is, so you ate one of them, and they're not going to kill you?
They ain't going to eat me. I'm a gay man and a gay journalist. And I've come up these roads, and I've looked at life, and I've looked at wildlife the same way I look at human beings.
877-876-PHIL. Let's go to a phone call on the line in Miami. Christian. Christian, you're on the Phil Hendry Show with Doug Danger. Go ahead, please.
Hey, Phil, how are you doing, man? It's a pleasure being on the show with you.
Yes, sir.
Quite frankly, I feel sad for the people that would actually read what this man is writing. Seriously, I mean, from watching Discovery Channel a whole lot and seeing Shark Week, I've learned a whole lot from the Discovery Channel.
Yeah. And you've been watching Shark Week, huh? Man,
yeah.
I'm out in the water with them. I'm out in the water with them.
Yeah, well, Shark Week.
You can't get that experience. You can't get that experience watching Shark. Now, you're going to tell me about Shark Week, man. You're already. You tell me about Shark Week.
Here is Russ. Go ahead, Russ. You're on the Phil Hendry Show.
Hi, Bill. Hi, Doug. I just have a couple of points. A problem that I think with this plan is that sharks have spent the last few hundred million years kind of learning how to perfect the aggressive swimming vibe, and I don't think there's anything that a person can do to outdo that vibe.
Really scientific, man, the aggressive swimming vibe. I haven't heard about that one.
300 million years of becoming precise killing machines. You're going to outdo that with, what, flailing your arms or what?
300 years or whatever you call it, being killing machines, and we can go out there and catch them with a hook and bait. So how badass are they?
You're not going out there with a hook and bait. You're going out there on a board with spotters. And
right.
The theory
right.
about the retarded sharks, there aren't.
But here's the thing about the vibe. You're talking about a vibe, man. You're like the other guy. You're watching Discovery Channel. You don't even know what you're talking about.
I'm talking about evolution.
No, you don't. You don't know what you're talking about. I'm out there as a human. I've evolved too as a human being. See, there's just the shark that has evolved. Have you? See, that's the difference between you and me. I don't care whether I have been or not.
Have you been out with sharks, though?
It doesn't matter if I've been out with a shark. You know, that sounds like a joke, doesn't it? It doesn't matter if I...
Yes, it does matter. Have you tested this?
I'm going to go out there on Monday, naked to the world, and...
With spotters and with the Coast Guard. That's the thing that people are asking about here. Here is Tony. Go ahead, Tony. You're on the Phil Hendry Show.
Hi, man. I just wanted to comment that... I want to know what being gay journalist has got anything to do. Do you think that shark cares that you're a gay journalist?
I'm a gay man. Well, you do. Obviously, you're talking about it. I don't know what the shark cares about. I'm just saying that as a gay man, as a gay journalist, I've come up through some pretty tough times, and I've had to walk down some pretty tough roads to get where I am. And as a gay man, as a gay journalist, I know that a shark is going to back off.
Are you
because I'm sitting out there on a surfboard.
How are you going to pick out which shark
is retarded?
I'm
on a surfboard, and I've eaten shark the night before.
I mean, when the shark is swimming up, it's all right, spotters.
The one that's retarded is the one that bites you. If you're surfing with authority.
I've got spotters. The spotter's going to holler at them, hey.
If you see a shark,
run.
If the shark's coming at you, yeah. You see a shark swimming at you.
What if there's like four or five sharks coming at you?
You know, you guys are both, this guy, you guys don't even know what you're talking about. I'm going to be out there in the water. What's that?
I'm simply saying. I'm answering your question. Are you going to negotiate with
I just
you?
Answered the question. I already answered your question. I said, the shark that does not pick up on the... No, you ate shark steak the night before.
Are you going to be like, hey,
yeah,
I ate your
right.
cousin last night? I mean, how do you know
but I'm gonna,
the shark? I mean,
well,
what's
you know,
your plan?
Are you doing comedy now or something? That's what this guy's doing.
No, he's asking some pretty good questions, though. What do you mean you ate shark the night before?
I know, negotiate. I am telling, you know what, both of you guys are idiots. What I'm saying...
Look, you can call me an idiot, and you can call my caller an idiot, but you're telling me that you're out there on a surfboard, and you ate shark. Now, what does that mean?
I'm a human being, and I'm communicating my humanness to the animal. That's number one. Number two, you know, Phil, here's the thing. Most people are so afraid of sharks, that they think sharks are almost like God, that there's nothing they can do against a shark.
Well, most people are not going to get in the water with a shark if they see a shark there.
Okay, and why is that?
Because they're afraid of getting bitten.
A shark ain't going to bite you if you don't look like a seal. Now, the only way the shark's going to bite you is if you look like a seal or a tortoise.
Oh, and so you're going to go out there on a surfboard, and you're going to look just like a seal or a tortoise.
I'm going to be on a surfboard looking like a seal or a tortoise, but I'm going to be human.
And how does the shark know that you're a human?
Because of the way I'm in that water, and I'm not afraid of that thing. Remember that one guy that called him and said he's a vine? I'm a gay man and a gay...
I know you're gay, I've heard that, but you're saying that you're in the water. How does the shark pick up on the fact that you're human?
That one dude that called up and said about the vibe. Remember I was making fun of him saying vibe? Well, he's right. There is a vibe. There's a human vibe. Now, I'm telling you, we need this because most people
if they hear about sharks in the water, they get scared to death, they run away, they blow their whole vacation to bits. They had a, you know, they were going to, you know, have a really nice time on vacation, but because of one shark and because they don't know nothing about sharks, they decide to turn around. I'm going to go out there and surf with deliberateness. My attitude will be I'm going to be out here all morning. If I see a shark, I'm going to get in the water. I don't care. I'm not scared.
Then the spotters are for what?
The spotters are sitting.
Because you said you're going to get in the water if you see a shark.
I will.
Then what are the spotters for?
The spotters are simply for if a shark actually does, you know, I'm in the water and I'm saying I'm not afraid of you. I'm in the water with sharks. What do you think a shark is going to think if I'm in the water with it?
That it wants to eat you?
They don't eat no humans.
All right. That it wants to at least try it to see if you are edible.
No. The shark is going to be, man, get a load of, listen to human, you know. So that's what the shark thinks. Now, if one actually does try to bite me, that's why I got spotters. And the reason why, and I should never have used the word retarded, because that one guy in Tennessee, now he's going to be, you know, regaling his friends with that tomorrow, and they're all going to think that he made it up, which actually I did.
No, I don't think so, Doug. I think that guy is going to give you full credit.
Well, he better. If one of them's a retard, I shouldn't say that, but if one is a shark that is developmentally disabled, then it will try...
Developmentally... All right, Doug, that's all the time we have.
Whoa, man. You ain't going to... Are you telling me that...
I'm telling you that's all the time we have. Good luck out there on Monday. Developmentally disabled shark. 877-876-PHIL. We have coming up next hour, Raj Faneen on the Juan Williams caper. World famous Phil Hendry Show.
This is the world famous Phil Hendry Show. Listening to the world famous Phil Hendry Show.
877-876-PHIL. Coming up next hour, we have Raj Faneen and this story, which I guess has a few people talking. I'm never really sure whether this is a news story or not, you know. And in our news hour, I guess we can talk a little bit about this with Bud and with Robert. But I thought I'd bring it up right here. GOP congressional candidate Stephen Brodin, or is it Stefan? I don't know. Why did you say it was Stefan, man? How does he pronounce his name? My producer said it was Stefan. What is he, a Kraut? GOP congressional candidate Stephen... How do you pronounce this guy's name, Mr. Producer? Is that right, Stefan? Republican congressional candidate Stefan Broder stunned his party Thursday, saying he would not rule out violent overthrow of the government if elections did not produce a change in leadership. So he is a Kraut. I'm kidding. In a rambling exchange during a TV interview, Broden, a South Dallas pastor, said a violent uprising is not the first option, but it is on the table. Now, I'm thinking of starting a blog or, you know, under a different name so I, you know, people will take me seriously. Because if I say it's Phil Hendry, they'll just think I'm kidding. But I want to do a blog, and I want to point out every day stories that are not really news stories that we've been conned into believing are, that the Dallas News has been conned into believing is a news story, or perhaps the National News Service, or maybe my producer was conned into thinking it was a news story. And here's why I don't think this really is a news story. There's any number of idiots every day expressing a stupid opinion. This is America. So one thing we got plenty of are stupid opinions. And I don't mean from politicians necessarily. I mean from the American people themselves. Because one thing we know how to do is bitch about politicians and really not have any ideas of our own, you know, and what's going on. So here comes a guy who says that the violent overthrow of the government is on the table. Well, for as long as I've been alive, people have been talking about the violent overthrow of the government. I mean, when I was a kid, you know, it was the Weather Underground or the SDS or the Yippies or somebody was talking about violently overthrowing the government. And then there was the communists. They were going to violently overthrow the government. The Nazis, they're going to violently overthrow the government. And even weird, extreme politicians at times would say crazy stuff like the Barry Goldwater or the Lyndon Johnson ad showing Barry Goldwater blowing the world up with an atomic bomb. So there's always kinds of extreme opinions being expressed. So what makes this guy so special? What makes this guy so special, Bud?
Well, I don't know. He said that he's going to do it.
He didn't say he was going to do it.
Yeah, he didn't say he was going to do it. He said that the violent overthrow of the government was a possibility.
Yeah, so if the guy gets elected on a Congress, he may do it.
Well, that's if he gets elected into Congress. I don't know how many guys are running for Congress on any given day, you know, in any given election year. Republican congressional candidate Stephen Brodin stunned his party Thursday, saying he would not rule out violent overthrow of the government if elections did not produce a change in leadership. In a rambling exchange during a TV interview, and when they say rambling exchange, they usually mean he's mentally deficient somehow.
They're talking about he's like crazy or something.
Yeah, basically crazy. In a rambling exchange during a TV interview, Brodin, a South Dallas pastor, said a violent uprising is not the first option, but it's on the table. That drew a quick denunciation from the head of the Dallas County GOP, who called the remarks inappropriate. Now, Brodin is a first-time candidate and a Tea Party favorite. I think the Tea Party people are picking their people based upon what they feel is sound economic philosophy, a sound attitude toward taxes. Isn't that what the Tea Party, you know?
Yeah, the Tea Party is about the tax and everything. It's what the Tea Party was.
Exactly, man. And they're picking people about taxes, and they don't know their ass about everything else.
Exactly. They're picking people based upon their philosophy, an agreeable philosophy, on taxation, on limiting taxation, on taking the federal hand out of the private taxpayer's pocket. But when it comes to every other kind of philosophy, whether it's, you know, anything else having to do with domestic policy or foreign policy, these people are part psycho. Now, he's right. You know, you can have a violent overthrow of the government. There's nothing that is wrong about the statement. It's the last, it's the last act of a desperate people to violently overthrow their government. It's happened before. It's happened. This is how this country came about. That's how sometimes change is affected. But in the history of the First World, that is the history of Western civilization, since World War II, the democracies have generally opted for something a little bit better, which is called the ballot. It seems to work better than going out in the streets and chopping everybody's heads off.
What do you mean chopping off the head? You talking about what?
Like France, man. The Reign of Terror in France.
What they do? They cut off a guy's head?
They cut off everybody's freaking. They put the heads of the... You didn't hear about that?
I heard about, like... Well, you talking about France. When?
In the 18th century.
Well, that was a long time ago.
Dude, that's how everything got... They got rid of the king in France by cutting his head off.
Yeah, that'd do it.
You better believe it did it. Although they got a dictator. See, here's the thing about revolutions. Here's the thing about violence. If it is not well directed, what happened in France?
What do you mean, what happened in France? They cut off the guy's head.
They cut off the guy's head. Then they had their, you know, Declaration of the Rights of Man, and they had their little Reign of Terror cutting off the heads of all these aristocrats and royalty, and then guess what? Napoleon.
Oh, like a dictator.
Exactly. So in came the dictator, and Napoleon came in to say, wait a minute. So they didn't get their freedom at all, man. They had a king again. They had an emperor this time. So, and that happened because the French lost control of the revolution. They had I don't even know if they knew what the hell it was they were rebelling against. And it probably had more to do with just the close quarters of Europe. But nonetheless, so violent overthrow has always, but what are you going to overthrow America and what are you going to change it into that's better? This jackass wants to have, or says he wants to reserve the right to violently overthrow the government. That's why when you ask that question, you come up with a big, like, the sound of crickets, man. He don't know. In an interview with WFAA and TV, Stefan, says a violent revolution, it's on the table.
Our nation was founded on violence.
In 2010, you would urge that as an option, though?
The option is on the table. I don't think that we should ever remove anything from the table as it relates to our liberties.
Dirty
and
dishes.
Freedoms.
What about the
Captain Cajones?
Way to do it there, man. All right, so anyway, Watson asked this is Brad Watson on WFAA-TV. He asked if the definition of revolution included violent overthrow of the government. In a prolonged back and forth, Brodin at first declined to explicitly address insurrection, saying the first way to deal with a repressive government is to alter it or abolish it. Where are you getting this repressive government thing, man? If the Tea Party really believes that this is a, quote, repressive government, they don't know a thing. Anyway, Broden said, adding, the nation was founded on a violent revolt against King George, which we all know. If the government is not producing the results or has become destructive to the ends of our liberties, we have a right to get rid of that government and to get rid of it by any means necessary. Quoting, of course, Malcolm X. Or maybe Malcolm X was quoting somebody.
I think Malcolm X was quoting someone.
No, he wasn't, man. He came up with that.
In any event, if these people in the Tea Party think that their rights are being stepped on, or there's restriction, or there's this, or there's that, or there's something else in this country that is just destroying their, I mean, it's just bad. It's real bad, man. And we got to have a violent revolution. If that's how they feel, they need, they're in more need of a psychiatrist than that retarded seal or shark that Doug Danger was talking about. Anyway, Raj Fanane joins us next to discuss Juan Williams' comments. Don't forget, PhilHenryShow.com, podcast, affiliate list, uncensored rants, PhilHenryShow.com.
Phil Hendry. This is the world-famous Phil Hendry Show.
Our nation was founded on violence.
In 2010, you
were... I was, like, scared, like, out of my mind scared.
I think it's sad. I think first, the decision by...
You may be witnessing history here.
Making it through a full 24 hours...
Hey, this is Charles Barkley. I'm a dumbass.
World-famous Phil Hendry Show. Every night till 1 o'clock on the West Coast, 4 a.m. on the East Coast, the news, talk, and entertainment show that knows what it's talking about, where truth is our bitch, and where through the looking glass we go every night and beyond, man, to go places actually where other talk shows can't go. They'd like to, but they can. Coming up this hour, Raj Fanane will join us, a businessman originally from the Middle East, and he will be talking to us about the Juan Williams caper, as we like to call him around here on the show, the NPR firing of Mr. Williams, the subsequent hiring of Mr. Williams, although he had been a news contributor there at Fox News. It would appear a much more expanded capacity awaits with a publicly revealed contract worth $2 million or so, we're told. Our affiliate spotlight tonight on WWRL 1600 in the great city of New York. And Brooksville, Florida, WWJB 1450 AM. We appreciate all of these great stations on our network. PhilHendryShow.com, the strong right arm of the Phil Hendry Show, is where you can go right now to watch live streaming video of the show, live streaming audio of the show. And if you're lucky, there are nights when I have complete emotional meltdowns, start throwing things. Oh, it's great, man. It's uncensored. It's behind the scenes. It's in front of the scenes. It's PhilHendryShow.com. 877-876-PHIL. We can kill Hugo Montenegro now, bud. Thank you. 877-876-PHIL. Juan Williams, young Mr. Williams from NPR, who expressed an opinion that a great many people have said, wow, sounds pretty normal to me. I don't know how many of us have actually gotten on an aircraft with someone in Muslim garb. I have seen people stopped and searched. This was really funny to me because... It was not too long after 9/11. I was dropping my wife off at the airport. She was going to San Antonio for a political meeting, and she, because her name is Sanchez, was on a terror watch list. Now, there must be a Maria Sanchez on a terror watch list someplace who is a legitimate terror threat, but because of her name, she got stopped too, while a lady with a hijab wrapped around her head, man, goes sailing right on through the line, no sweat. You know what I'm saying? Now, I'm not complaining here. I'm just wondering how they do these things. Anyway, that was what essentially Juan Williams was, the opinion he was expressing, that he's a little disquieted by the appearance of people in Muslim garb. Was he bagging on Muslims specifically, or was it a comment on the hijacking of that religion by extremists? Fox News host Bill O'Reilly continued to publicize the conservative crusade to defund NPR over the partly publicly funded radio network's controversial decision to fire Juan Williams for remarks made earlier in the week on the O'Reilly Fichter. NPR dismissed Williams, a longtime commentator who has written widely on civil rights issues, for confessing his personal skittishness over seeing fellow air travelers dressed in Muslim garb garb on O'Reilly's show. The irony, though, of course, is this. The cats that hijacked the aircraft on 9/11 were dressed probably in Dockers. Who knows? They sure as hell weren't wearing no, they didn't have no turban on. In any event, on Fox and Friends this morning, Juan Williams, who would qualify, I guess, as one of the friends, Juan Williams says, NPR, they shouldn't accept public funds.
If they want to compete in the marketplace, they should compete in the marketplace. They don't need public funds. Right. I think that they should go out there. If they think the product is so great, go out and sell the product. And what happens is, too often then, they want to make it out like, you know what, we are a public jewel, and we need the protection of the federal government. We need federal funds that come through the member stations, and they pay for this product. Nonsense. They are on the federal dole is what it is, and they better admit it and step up if they want to compete. But you know what? Without diversity of views, without diversity of people, I wonder if they would be so successful in the marketplace. I think they are very much speaking to an elitist crowd, and they have become self-righteous in their attitudes, and it's why they want to attack somebody like me. I have no idea why they're doing this.
Here is Representative Peter King, who ain't exactly the brightest bulb on the tree, but anyway, he argues NPR should not receive any public funding, so I guess that's kind of what Juan just said, but anyway.
There's a real question of whether or not the government should be involved in funding broadcasting anyway, and today with so many media outlets, there's even more of a question if it's needed. But this case shows conclusively that the American taxpayers should not be subsidizing such a biased left-wing liberal apparatus. I would say the same thing if NPR was as conservative as they are liberal now. Because to me, their real bias showed what Juan Williams said is what the overwhelming majority of Americans believe.
Okay, Raj Faneen is with us. There's so much to talk about, but Raj Faneen joins us, a businessman residing in the United States, a national of Egypt, and is here with his wife and his young son. And Raj, thanks for joining us this evening again on short notice, but I just wanted to talk to you about this because we've heard the American side, you know.
I thank you. I think it's important, you know, and also because we've lived in this country for the period that we have this perspective, you know.
Now, you've heard the comments here about people in Muslim garb, and specifically Juan Williams' comments, that he feels disquieted, that he feels skittish, that it makes him nervous. Do you understand any of that?
I was, for the most part, disappointed that this was African-American, say, because, you know... This pastor, he worked for this Fox News. And now Fox News is conservative, and they have the right to be that. But Mr. Juan Williams, he is a black man, and is not showing sensitivity, I think, for being persecuted, you know, as the Muslim people.
And you're saying that Juan Williams did not show a sensitivity as an African-American?
Yes, that's right. As an African-American, he should know more than anybody should know what Muslim people, like myself, my wife, my son, what we must endure because of this kind of prejudice, you know. So it was very, very painful for me to hear, because it was like he betrayed me.
Do you feel that every black person in America has common cause with Muslims in this regard?
I think they should. I think they. Every time a black man goes into a store, you know, they look and they, oh, what is the black man going to steal?
And you feel that that's how America is even to this day, in every quarter?
I think, yes. I think.
Do you feel that America...
Excuse me, let me finish you one comment at a time, please.
No, but I want to ask you, do you feel America has not improved?
Well, I've only been here for 3 years. But what I've seen, boy, I tell you, it's not good. You know, it's not encouraging because, you know, Juan Williams is a black man. And he's like, he's... you know, what they call Barack Obama, they call him the N-word, you know. And this Juan Williams should know this, but he's not. He's not.
All right, 877-876-PHIL. I'm going to put out the call to have people call in. Raj?
Yeah, sure, of course.
And we'll also continue talking with you. 877-876-PHIL, talking here with Raj Faneen. All right, so you feel that it was a betrayal. You feel that...
It was the betrayal because he should know better than to take the side of the white man. You know.
Do you feel that the people who are opposed, do you feel everybody is a white man who would talk like that?
I think most people that talk like that. But look, I don't want to make this about the white or black, you know. I think in that case, he speak for the white man.
And who? What white man are you talking about?
The people at the Fox. That's a white man. You know, that's a white man. I think NPR is more of a black man.
Do you listen to NPR?
Excuse me. What did you say?
Raj, do you listen to NPR?
Yes, I do. I listen to NPR. I like to listen to NPR. But I have to tell you that Muslim people who dress in a traditional Muslim garb, if they dress in a traditional hijab, wear a traditional Muslim garb, are looked upon as a terrorist and are looked upon as a danger, and it has affected my life and has affected my wife's life, has affected my son's life, so that we feel that we don't even live in a... I don't even feel I live in a country, you know?
Well, all right, let me ask you something. Maybe we shouldn't talk about Juan Williams. Do you, when you get on an airplane, are you targeted as a Muslim by the airline? Do you feel unfairly targeted by security?
Well, no, I don't wear... You know, I don't wear this.
You don't wear traditional Muslim garb?
No, no.
Does your wife?
No. My wife does not wear hijab. My son does not.
Why is that?
Well, because there's mostly these people who, anybody who dressed this way, what you say, is just off the boat. You know, this mostly a new immigrant. And I don't identify with them. And I am afraid of them. But I also don't want them to be persecuted by these, what sounds to me like a white man, and Juan Williams.
All right, now you just said something very interesting. You don't trust people in Muslim garb either, even though you're from the Middle East and you're Muslim.
That is correct, yes.
Why is that?
Well, the people wear this Muslim garb are just, to use the phrase that you use, just off the boat. You know,
they're recently arrived immigrants?
Yes, they're recently arrived immigrants. So they would most likely be the one who would blow a plane to bits or something. And so, yes, I am nervous. But also, I see them as to be persecuted, you know, because they look, you know, different. Some people think they look stupid. And that nobody, for instance, will ever say to a Hindu, you know, you look very strange with a dot in, you know, your forehead, or you have you're a Hindu, you know, you've got a Hindu, you know, on your head. But
see, what you're saying is this is one of the things I think that causes a problem in our country. You don't think that the people wearing the Muslim garb should be persecuted, and yet you call them people who are just off the boat and the ones that are most likely going to cause a terrorist problem.
Oh, yeah, sure. I don't think anyone's going to disagree with that. You know,
and yet they should not be harassed or otherwise bothered.
Well, to the extent that you are going to protect from a terror, of course they would, you know. But Juan Williams to look at them and say, this is a terrorist, that is wrong because that is the way the establishment would think. And Juan Williams... He is a black man, and that is also, you know, to me, he sold us out.
So Juan Williams sold out people of the Islamic faith, people of color, by saying what he said, and also the people who wear that garb should not be persecuted, but also their recently arrived immigrants who are suspect.
Right.
All right. Can you see how this is confusing?
No. And let me tell you why, Phil.
No, but you can see how it confuses me, right? Or other Americans?
No. And I'll tell you why. The American people have spent enough time now being educated on the conditions of the Middle East. And this is something now they must understand. There's no more time to hold your hand.
Well, how are you holding my hand? I want to understand how it is that I'm supposed to first fear people who wear Muslim garb because they're just off the boat and most likely to commit a terror attack, and at the same time not, quote, persecute them. All I want to do is have a realistic view of what's going on.
That is exactly correct.
So you tell me that the guy that's most likely going to commit a terrorist act is wearing Muslim garb because he's just off the boat, but for me to express that fear, or Juan Williams, which is worse, is wrong.
Well, Juan Williams is a black man, and for him to do what he did, you can't, there's no, you can't crawl any lower than that, you know. As a white man, sure. You know.
All right, 877-876-PHIL. So Raj Faneen joining us here. Pardon me, I didn't mean to hang up. I'm not hanging up, but I'm a little... understand, he's saying that a traditional Muslim garb that Juan Williams was talking about is worn by people that are, quote, just off the boat, end quote, and therefore more likely to be terrorists. But the opinion that Mr. Williams expressed is still offensive. 877-876-PHIL, the world famous Phil Hendry Show, back right after this.
Phil Hendry.
You understand?
No, I don't.
Okay, let me go through it again. If you get off the boat.
You're listening to the world-famous Phil Hendry Show.
And we're here with Raj Faneen joining us, talking about this this incident with Juan Williams where he lost his position with National Public Radio, saying in a general, I'm just paraphrasing, that when he saw fellow air travelers dressed in Muslim garb, he was skittish, he was nervous, he was, you know, he feared a terror attack. Raj Faneen joins us, a native of Egypt, a resident of the Los Angeles area with his wife and his son. We're still Egyptian national, right, Raj?
Yes.
All right. Now, the question is, and we'll get to some phone calls from me, is the following question. You know, you were telling me that a white man being scared of a Muslim in traditional garb is racist and immoral. But you are also scared of a Muslim in traditional garb. But you don't call that immoral. Why?
Look, you know, Phil, the white man to be scared of a Muslim in traditional garb is racist and immoral because you don't know the Muslim. And I should not even say the white man. I mean the Western man, you know.
Well, you're making it about race because of Juan Williams.
Only because I would have expected more from Mr. Williams being... the NPR and being a black, you automatically expect that he's going to, you know, he's going to know what to say. And he was obviously confused. But you don't know the Muslim experience. I know the Muslim experience because I grew up among them. I lived among them. I know them. So I'm scared.
Well, why can't I take your fear and I say, well, if you're scared, I'm scared?
Because I don't want you to. I am a Muslim, I am not American, and I don't want you piggybacking your fear on mine because that makes me look like I'm... there's a phrase you use in this country, which I don't think is... but it's sucking up to the man, you know? It makes me look like I'm sucking up to the man.
It makes you look like you're sucking up to the man if I let you be... Boy.
No. If you are afraid of a Muslim and you say the reason why I'm afraid of the Muslim is because Raj is afraid of a Muslim. I'm afraid of the Muslim because of, I know the people. Do you know this term hayseed that you have in this country?
Do I know the term of what?
Do you know this term of hayseed?
Hazy?
Hayseed.
Hayseed?
Yes, sir.
Okay, I know that term, yeah.
That's what we have in Muslim. We have hillbilly. We have a hayseed. And this hillbilly come over and he, right off the boat. And he looks the way he looks. And I know he is mostly not very smart. But I also know he is capable because you can exploit them.
877-876-PHIL. I've got so many questions, but I will keep them in reserve. Here is Azra Osro, you're on the Phil Hendry Show with Raj Fineen. Go ahead, please.
Thanks, Phil. Good morning to both of you gentlemen. And
good morning.
My question to you, Mr. Azra, I'm a Muslim myself.
Yes, sir.
Just want to ask you one simple question. If you were offended by a comment from a black person saying he feels uncomfortable, which is, in my opinion, he does have a right to express his opinion, you live in a free society. Why is it racist when he says it, but it's not racist for you to be a Muslim to say you feel uncomfortable to see a Muslim person and a Muslim guard to be in a plane with you? What is so different from what you say and what he says?
Well, because first, Juan William is a black man, you know, and for me that was shocking, you know, an American black man to say I am afraid of a Muslim.
Well, that's a little confusing. Why would, suppose it was a white man?
If the white man, I'd say he's a racist because white America is a racist, you know. Now, you ask me why it's not racist for me. You know as well as I do that these hillbilly come over, you know, as I said to Mr. Henry. And they are the people most likely to be exploited, yes.
Mr. Rod, I think
yes,
if you look at through the whole history, even in 9/11, the people who attacked the United States in 9/11, none of them were wearing a Muslim guard. That's number
one.
That
was what I said. Yeah. Yeah.
Number two, you need to understand, by you coming from a Muslim country, to be given an opportunity to come in a national radio station.
Tell you what, Azra, hold the line. Hold on, Azra. We'll be right back. I have to take a break.
I want to answer this, man.
Hold on. 877-876-PHIL, world famous Phil Hendry Show.
Phil Hendry. Phil
Hendry. Hold on. 877-876-PHIL. Raj Fineen joining us as we talk about Juan Williams and the NPR, getting fired from NPR only to be hired at Fox because he said, and we roughly quote, he felt skittish on an aircraft while looking at people in Muslim garb. Now, Juan Williams is a news analyst. He's not a reporter. He's a news analyst. And I don't know whether that's a fancy term that NPR uses to confuse the idea of being a commentator as opposed to an analyst, as opposed to a reporter. I personally don't think there's a difference between analyst and commentator. An analyst and a commentator are basically the same. And their firing of Mr. Williams appears to some people to be hypocritical, to be an attack on you talk about First Amendment, it looks like it's an attack to me on his job description. It's like, here's the job I hired you to do. You just did your job. You're fired. Raj is with us, and we also had Azra hanging on the line, who I accidentally hung up on him. Azra, you still there with us?
Yeah.
Okay, and Raj?
Yes, sir. And can I comment on something you said?
Go ahead.
You can have all this free speech, and I believe in free speech. Muslims believe in free speech, but you're going to start talking about putting my wife in a bag. You know,
what do you mean your wife in a bag?
The burqa, you know.
All right. Osro, go ahead, sir. You make your comment.
Mr. Raj. Burqa, you know more than I do. The burqa is not a Muslim traditional dress for a female. That's a culture dress. There are two different things between what the religion obligated you to do as a follower and what the culture forces you to follow as from being from that culture. And you know as well as I do, in Egypt, in many other Muslim countries, you don't see women wearing the burqa, except in Afghanistan and Pakistan.
No, that's what I said. You know, it's mostly these hazy, like I said, they call a hillbilly.
Mr. Ross, listen. If you sound like an educated person, when you take your oath to become a citizen of the United States, one of the obligations you have. You take an oath and you pledge allegiance to this country. For you to come to a national radio station and bash your own race, there's no difference between you and the white man that you describe that is hateful towards the Muslims. The Americans have the right to feel uncomfortable because of what happened in September 11. In order for Muslims like yourself and myself to change the view of the American people, we have to put into a table and to prove that not all of the Muslims are terrorists. What you're doing is a wrong approach to make
All I said was if you have your wife wear a burqa, you are a hillbilly. You agree with that, though?
No.
A hillbilly.
Listen. You don't see a Muslim female in a burqa in the United States. We are talking about
what happens in the United States. That's right.
Okay.
But you do see the hijab. You see a hijab.
If your wife wears a hair scarf, there are so many new styles in the hair scarf that females can wear.
Hillbilly. Right. But it's still hillbilly.
Wait a minute. I want to. Is the hijab you see, Raj, is a hillbilly thing?
I think so. Yeah.
Listen,
that's also not. That is also not a religiously mandated.
Mr. Raj,
that is
Mr.
a choice.
Raj, here's what I'm gonna tell you, Mr. Raj. I have lived in this country for a long time, and I have served in Iraq in three terms as a part of Iraqi Operation Freedom. And here's what I'm telling you.
Well, you
have a right to feel uncomfortable. You, as a Muslim, being from a different part of the world, it's a shame on you to say you feel uncomfortable when you see your fellow Muslim brothers coming over in a plane. If you yourself, you feel uncomfortable, you're doing it just you want to fit in. That's not the way you want to fit in. Be proud where you come from. You want to do good.
It's like this. When I went down to you don't understand something about America that I'm going to tell you. Mr. Henry says to me that he went to Louisiana one time and he went to Delacroix and there was Cajun people there. And Mr. Henry, didn't you say you were afraid of deliverance, man? Take your pants off.
No, I didn't say that. No, I did not say that. I said the hillbillies down there, it reminded me of that movie Deliverance, yeah.
Okay, it's the same thing when I see this hillbilly come over from Afghanistan.
Mr. Raj,
listen
to yourself. If you watch the news, there was a Navy SEAL.
I don't know.
Listen,
my son wanted to know why you call me Mr. Raj, my son.
Okay.
You call me Mr. Fanin.
Okay, fine. Go ahead.
Listen, there was a Navy SEAL. I believe his name was Mansoor. He was a Muslim. His unit got attacked by a hand grenade. He threw his body onto the hand grenade to save the other fellow comrades. He was a Muslim, too. Guys like him proved to the United States that not all of the Muslims are terrorists. Guys like you...
No, that's a great story.
Guys like you pretty much disgrace.
Are you sure he was Muslim? Are you sure he was Muslim?
Alhamdulillah, wa salatu wa salamu ala Muhammad. Of course I'm a Muslim.
Was this man in the Navy SEAL a Muslim? Are you sure?
Yes, he's sure.
I didn't
ask you if you were a Muslim. I asked if the man in the Navy SEAL was a Muslim.
He said he was a Muslim. Yes.
He was a Muslim. Go on the news, check it out. His family got awarded the Medal of Honor.
Yeah, we can look that up. The Medal of Honor.
So he took the infidel's medal.
Let's watch this with the infidel thing, okay?
Listen to me.
We got to take a break.
Straight.
Yeah, you need to take a break. And all I'm trying to say is, and this man, if you see a hillbilly coming down the road, you aren't afraid.
What is with this hillbilly thing, man? So, in other words, anybody in a burqa is a hillbilly.
Yeah.
You need to get your facts straight. Be proud of your where you come from.
All right. Yeah, Ezra, I got to take a break. I appreciate your call. 877-876-PHIL with Raj Fanin as we talk about Juan Williams and NPR. That man, and by the way, let's see if our producer, Jason Rantz, I don't think we have that information.
But the only way to keep America from being fearful of you and me is to stop looking like Juan Williams from going on television talking down about a Muslim, you know? Can we agree on that? Would you agree on that for Americans from being fearful of you and me?
What do you mean Americans being fearful of you and me? What are you talking about?
Because of people like Juan Williams.
Oh, did you mean me?
Well, listen to you, man. Me? No, I meant Muslims. And I meant the... Is the man gone?
Yes, he's gone.
Oh, I meant him. But if we stop Juan Williams from going on the television and talking this crap about me and the Muslim, then we are well ahead of the game.
That guy that was just on, Mr. Finine, was saying that when you refer to fellow Muslims as hillbillies... Okay, you're talking down about those people, and that's not cool.
I don't care what's cool. He may not think it's cool, but you told me that if you were in a bar with those deliverance guys, you'd be walking out with a frying pan covering your rear end. Didn't you say that?
I didn't say that for broadcast. Yeah, I said that.
You put a frying pan over your butt.
Okay, and the point is what?
That's what I was trying to say to that guy.
So when you go see some cat in a burqa coming out of the hills of Afghanistan or wherever, Syria, he's just, you might as well be looking at a bunch of guys. That's like the Middle East version of deliverance.
Yes! Yes! Yes!
Fine. 877-876-PHIL. Oh, my God. The world famous Phil Henry Show. We got a Dr. Green Thumb report coming up, too, and Lindsay Lohan is ordered to stay in rehab. Only she can't afford it. Phil Henry Show.
This is the world-famous Phil Henry Show. You're listening to the world-famous Phil Henry Show.
Sunday Night Phil is Sunday night, 3 hours of classic Phil Henry on our website, philhenryshow.com. So you can tune in to our Sunday Night Phil on the web. So go over to our website, philhenryshow.com, or you can listen to it remote. If you've got, even on the iPhone, you can log in using your password and using your username. And while you're cruising around on your iPhone, listen to Sunday Night Phil on our website, philhenryshow.com. It's 3 hours of archived classic material that we bust out every Sunday night. And, hey, you know what? It beats like 80% of the TV you're going to be watching. 877-876-PHIL. And this is like I was just saying to you guys, I'm going to do a website, you know, where what is it, news or isn't it news? Or, you know, what's going on, man? What's a new way of attacking things? You know, what's a new way of approaching things, okay? And I know I got Robert and Bud with me here. We're going to do the news hour next hour. But you guys can chime in on this if you want. Calvin Klein jeans ad banned in Australia for suggesting rape. Now,
That looks like they're all on it.
Yeah, it does.
Yeah, it's an ad, and it shows a woman, and there's one, two, three guys that are near a chain link fence, and one guy's got his pants unbuttoned halfway down his ass, and another guy she's laying on top of him, and yeah, it looks like they're attacking this chick out in the open. And I think she's nude from the waist down. Can you tell, Bud?
Yeah, it looks like there's no underwear on.
Thank you.
Let me see.
There.
Yeah, I would agree.
Thank you. All right. So, yes, the ad does suggest some kind of forcible sex. Now, there's a difference between rape and just rough sex. This looks like rape. And so, therefore, it's violent. You know, it's not just sex. It's not even sex. It's an act of violence. That's what rape is, a violent act. You know, people don't even know what rape is. Nobody knows what rape is. Even some women who've maybe even experienced it don't really know that it's an act of pure, sheer. There's no sex urge having to do with rape. It has to do with violence. So It's against the law, and it is a it's an illegal thing. But we've seen ads where they show a guy robbing a bank. We've seen ads where a guy's speeding. We've seen ads where people may even be using drugs as a way of, you know, getting kids not to use drugs. We've seen all kinds of ads that suggest all kinds of things. Now, I look at this, and I hear an increasingly strident group of voices saying, oh, we can't have this, we can't have that. We shouldn't have this, we shouldn't have that. And look at that ad's got that, and that ad's got that. And I know that I have come out against any ad that shows kids in sexually compromised or suggesting sex, which I still do because we got to protect kids. But these are adults, and this is an adult act. It's a there is still is a victim, and we have to protect women. But here's what I'm saying: rather than ban the ad. Rather than ban the ad, and maybe this is true of any Calvin Klein, who this guy's got to have a screw loose anyway, this Klein. But I guess he knows how to get people to talk about his jeans, huh?
Yeah, but my understanding is, ain't he gay?
Why do you say that? On account of he makes jeans and everything?
Yeah.
Well, so he's a designer? He's got to be gay, huh?
Yeah, well, I'm not saying yeah, every designer, but ain't he?
No, I don't know, man. I honestly don't know.
Yeah, he is.
Do you know that, bud?
Well... Is he a designer of jeans? Yes, he is. You know, I mean, yeah, he's gay.
Do you know that for a fact?
Yeah, do you know that?
Yeah, I'm going to go out and say he's gay.
Well, what difference does that make anyway? I'm talking about, why did we even get sidetracked on that? I'm talking...
Yeah, because I'm right and you just want to blow past it.
Okay, let's... Hey, way to go, man. You guessed it, Calvin Klein's gay. And that's great.
Thank you.
Yeah, that's great. Anyway, why even ban the ad? I'm getting so tired of ban this, ban that, take that off the billboard, don't do this. Why not have a brisk discussion open to the public, right out in the open, about what a degenerate and trashy and despicable way to advertise your product it is. Go ahead, put it up on a billboard. I think it's great. Why ban it?
Yeah, but I mean, some guy going to think, hey, look at that, man, I think I'm going to get me some of that, you know, and maybe be the same way.
Not if the culture, not if the discussion at large is about what a degenerate and despicable ad it is.
Yeah, but then you're going to have people defending it, too.
Fine, let them defend it. I mean, what happens is this, man. You know, we ban something, and then we have a discussion about it after the fact, and people don't even know what the hell it is we're talking about. Most of the time, the item that people don't like, if it's not banned, we suddenly realize, wow, it really wasn't as bad as we thought it was. It really wasn't as disgusting as we thought it was. It really wasn't as... So, you know, I've got 180 degrees on this, man. In my opinion... If you have an ad from Calvin Klein that shows little kids in underwear in sexually suggestive poses, I say go ahead and keep the ad. Although I don't know, I probably legally you can't do it because you're using minors in an ad that is sexual. But if there was a way, let them put the ad up. Let Calvin Klein in all of his glory show this degenerate sensibility he has when it comes to his clothing. Go ahead, man. I mean, it's good, you know.
Yeah, but like Robert was saying, the people are going to want to, you know, look at kids with their pants off and stuff.
I what do you mean they're going to want to?
Because they'll be influenced by it.
Oh, get out of here, will you, man? A healthy person's going to look at that and say, well, that's a pretty sad thing, man, using kids that way. A healthy person's going to look at this Calvin Klein's ad and say, that looks to me like there's dudes that are forcing sex on that woman. That's not really right, you know? And on a talk show, of course, we can say that Calvin Klein is a sick, twisted queer. Now then.
Oh, man, you're going to be in trouble for that.
Yeah.
No, I'm kidding around. Well, I'm not. I mean, I'm not. You know what I mean.
No, man, you better apologize for that.
Apologize for what?
Calling sick and twisted.
Oh, okay. I apologize. You know what I'm talking about, all right? So, the ad, which features supermodel Laura Stone and three men in various states of undress, had received more than 50 complaints as well as criticism from women's advocates who claimed it promoted gang rape and violence, according to this New Zealand paper or this Australian paper, calling the campaign highly sexualized and clearly suggestive of sexual behavior. Well, that wouldn't be bad if it wasn't the fact that it was rape. Who cares if it's highly sexualized or suggestive of sexual behavior? That in and of itself is another that's a completely different discussion.
But what are you talking about? You saying it's okay if it's sex?
That's a different discussion, man. That's a different discussion. The discussion we're having right now is this looks like it's three men attacking a woman.
Yeah, but ain't that sex?
What did I just get done telling you idiots? No, it ain't. It's violence. The board considered that whilst the act depicted could be consensual, the overall impact and most likely takeout is that the scene is suggestive of violence and rape. The board considered that the image was demeaning to women by suggesting she's the plaything of these men. So I think you got to stick with the rape thing, okay? Whatever the hell this board is, the women's jackball committee, stick with the rape. Stick with what is the most obviously destructive aspect of this thing. So I think they had to keep the billboard up and let people talk about it. I mean, it would be nice if people were saying, boy, Calvin Klein, you're a sick ass. And suddenly Calvin Klein, he don't feel so hip anymore. Clinical psychologist and sex abuse worker Allison Grundy told the Herald Sun that the ad was clearly intimating gang rape. If we continue to subject future generations of young men to great barrages of aggressive, misogynistic, over-sexualized, and violent imagery in pornography, movies, computer games, and advertising, we continue to see the rates of sexual violence against women and children that continue unabated today or worse. And man, I sure don't buy that argument that the images in society create criminal behavior. I think criminal behavior is created in different ways, not some freaking advertisement on TV. But anyway, I think Dr. Stone would agree with this lady.
Yeah, well, Dr. Stone said that they're more psychopath and everything on account of drug.
Yeah, he didn't say nothing about TV shows. I don't think he said anything about TV shows. All right, our number is 877-876-PHIL, and of course, our website, philhenryshow.com. Some dude showed up at a Obama rally today. He was a stage worker. He was the member of a union, and the Obama rally was being televised, and so he was a part of a TV stage crew that was setting up things for the Obama rally. He was wearing a sweatshirt that had the name of his son's ship on it, the ship that his son is currently serving on in the United States Navy. When the union chief saw the sweatshirt that the father was wearing with the son's ship's name on it, he told the guy to go home and take it off or he's fired. What was on this guy's sweatshirt? We'll find out when we come back. World famous Phil Henry Show, 877-876-PHIL.
Phil Henry. This is the world-famous Phil Hendry Show.
If they want to compete in the marketplace,
then there's the decision to release them widely.
I was, like, scared, like, out of my mind scared.
I don't know what it's like to be picked on.
You have been tweeting me.
Definitely. I wish you well. Have fun.
You're not going anywhere, are you?
World-famous Phil Hendry Show every night till 1 o'clock on the West Coast, 4 a.m. on the East Coast, a news talk and entertainment show that knows what it's talking about. Every night to the looking glass we go, where truth is our bitch, and going places other talk shows wish they could but can't. And welcome back here, 877-876-PHIL, and our website, philhendryshow.com, philhendryshow.com. Named by PC World as one of the funniest on the web. And still, we think the superior broadcast website anywhere in terms of a radio show, man. We have more in our archives, more to offer you in terms of podcasts, more to offer you in terms of our news feed, more to offer you in terms of video than any other website out there. So check it out, philhendryshow.com. And frankly, if you don't have a backstage pass, you're only getting like one quarter of the show. I mean,
you get like 3 hours instead of four.
Yeah, you're missing one quarter of the, we do one show off air. We do, not one show, we do 1 hour off air, and it is the pre-feed between 9 and 10, and it gets pretty rowdy. Let me just put it that way. A man says he was canned from his job over a sweatshirt. And can Lindsay Lohan afford rehab? Jeez, I thought she was doing okay. Now she's broke, huh?
Yeah, I guess she needs to have some money so she can go in and get whatever the drug is, you know.
What is her drug? What's the problem with her?
What?
What is she addicted to?
I think it's like alcohol.
Yeah, it's alcohol, and she does coke, and not allowed to, you know.
It ain't heroin or any of that jazz, right?
I don't know.
What, cocaine mostly, huh? Okay. I understand completely, Lindsay. I have an addiction to caffeine, and perhaps in my life I would have had an addiction to cocaine were it not for one thing and one thing only, I couldn't afford it. Thank you and good night. No,
really?
Probably. I don't know. I mean, that I definitely am the type of person. You know, they say that a drug addiction is simply a person trying to medicate all kinds of messed up biochemistry. Everybody's got biochemistry in their brain. Everybody does something to affect the biochemistry of their brain to make it work right. And that means to make them feel better. Some of us drink coffee. Some of us drink a lot of coffee. Some of us take tranquilizers. Some people take pills to help them sleep. Some people drink. Some people drink to excess. There is, and some people don't do any of that, and that is because their biochemistry in terms of the brain is functioning pretty good. Maybe they eat the right kind of food. I don't know. I don't care. But Lindsay Lohan, I understand you, maybe more than you could possibly imagine. Anyway.
It's getting creepy.
I understand. 877-876-PHIL. We also have a Dr. Greenthumb report, speaking of medicating yourself, coming up. Now, a stagehand said he was fired for wearing the sweatshirt of his son's ship, and he was working a rally that was actually today, I believe. It was happening here in Los Angeles, and it was a President Obama rally of some kind. The basic headline here from KTLA Channel 5, which is one of our favorite news sources here in Los Angeles, because Channel 5 gets it right most of the time. Dwayne Hammond is the gentleman's name, and he wore a sweatshirt with the name of his son's ship at this rally. Now, he is a union stagehand, so he didn't just show up for the rally to say, yay, President Obama. He was there working. He was part of the crew that built the platform for President Obama's event on campus at USC today. When I say today, I mean Friday. He came to work early in the morning on Friday wearing clothing that said, George H.W. Bush. Why? Well, because Hammond's son is in the Navy, currently serving on the aircraft carrier, you got it, USS George H.W. Bush. Now, Mr. Hammond wore the sweatshirt because he'd been to a family day on the aircraft carrier, and he got the sweatshirt as part of the little gift packs that they give you as a member of the family. And I know these family days because my brother was in the Navy, and they invited families down for a variety of events in San Diego when the guys were down there. And wherever this gentleman went to his son's family day. The back of the sweatshirt has a large drawing of the aircraft carrier, and the man said he wore it to show how proud he is of his son. Well, that didn't go over well with the union supervisor. The union supervisor not identified, but Mr. Hammond says he was told to take off the sweatshirt, or he would have to go home. He refused, and then they told him he was fired from the job. Now, James Wright, a business representative from the IATSE, which is the Stage Workers Union, and it's the Local 33, he said the union's still investigating what happened. This is kind of a funny comment, and this is the last line in the story. If he was sent home because of the sweatshirt, he'll get paid for the day. Ta-da! Well, that's great. I just lost my job. Now, there's a couple of things here that I think, bears repeating.
I think that guy ought to sue, man, the thing they did to him.
Yeah.
Well, wait a minute. Let's just hold on for a second. He's part of a stage workers union. It is an event for President Obama. It is on campus at USC. Yes, I understand there's such a thing as free speech. I also understand that as a member of the stage union that was setting up the event, he's not exactly part of the audience. He's sort of part of the producing crew. You understand what I'm saying?
Uh-uh.
You don't understand?
No.
In other words, if he's part of the producing crew that is putting on this event for President Obama, don't you think it would be appropriate for someone to say to him, if they thought, well, you know, that kind of looks bad, would you please take that off? You don't think that's appropriate?
I don't know, man. It's freedom of speech and everything.
I know it's freedom of speech, man. I got that already, okay? I understand that. I'm just saying, it's kind of like, for instance, when they told that chick not to wear, the headscarf at Disneyland.
What? What are you talking about? That's Disneyland. It's the President Obama and everything about that.
Yeah, everybody knows that when the president shows up, you get to, like, put a sign up and everything.
I know that. Would you guys quit thinking like simpletons and listen to me? I understand that.
But what are you trying to say?
I'm saying, man, it ain't Disneyland, but it is. It's a production.
Are you trying to say it's like Obama's a musical? He's a president of the United States. And as such, he's not a musical, a man, you know.
Will you listen to me, man? I ain't saying he's a musical. I'm just telling you, this guy was not in the crowd as a attendee or a protest or whatever. He's part of the crew that is helping to produce this rally for the president at USC. So they said, take off the shirt. Now, here's a couple things. When they said take off the shirt, they might have been right and they might have been wrong, but he refused. He refused to take the shirt off.
Yeah.
Why?
Well, because he has a constitutional right and everything.
He has the constitutional right, I know, but if it wasn't a shirt about President Bush, it was a shirt about his son's ship, what's the big deal? I mean, if this guy's shirt is not politicized, but it's simply, hey, I'm really proud of my son, okay, and that's all it is. I'm proud of my son, and I'm proud of his service on this ship. Why would you make a big deal about keeping it on or taking it off?
You got the right, because like the time that, my daughter gave me a picture of her, you know, and I wanted to put it on the wall, I would not let no one tell me to take it down. Not for nothing.
No, man. No, not the same thing.
Why not?
Because his office, his cubicle, you're sitting in a cubicle and you got pictures that your daughter put there. Okay, that's fine, man. I'm talking about a public rally where there's TV cameras, where there's people looking, where there's cats all over the place, they're looking. And they're saying, aha, well, this is the President Obama thing. And, oh, look at that. There's a guy there with a George Bush sweatshirt. Oh, don't worry. He's a member of the crew. How does anybody know that? You know, well, it's kind of messing up the look of the rally with a guy standing there on the stage crew, which means he could be very much in the shot with a George Bush sweatshirt. Well, he's a member of the union, and he has a right to, you know, his opinion. I know, but aren't we sort of managing an event here? Are we not? For instance, would we have the right if you had a political convention and it was and Obama got nominated? Right. And he's now the nominee of the Democratic Party, as he was in 2008. And Phil Hendry walks up and he says, I want to put a sign on the stage where Obama's going to be giving his speech that says, way to do it, President Bush.
Well, what are you talking about, man? I mean, why would you do that?
Doesn't matter why I would do it. Maybe I just wanted to.
Well, I don't understand.
Yeah, I know you don't understand because I'm laying it to you straight and solid here, man. Don't they have the right to stage manage their event to some degree? Now, if they don't have that right, then they don't have that right. I think they do. I think they do. And even though that sweatshirt is about his son's ship, it looks to the naked eye as if it's about President George Bush. And to the Obama people, that's not cool. So they asked the guy to take it off. Now, he said it was about his son's ship.
Yeah, and that's all it was.
Then why not take it off?
Maybe it was cold or something.
What an idiot.
What are you talking about, man?
Maybe it was cold. Well, you know something, man? Well, maybe it was cold. That's a good point.
Yeah.
Oh, now you agree, huh?
Well, now that you think about it, yeah.
Maybe it was cold. I don't know. But I would say the following. I would say that if you're a stagehand, then you know as a union worker, especially a union stagehand, you're the best there is. And so you know what a stage is. What's a stage? It's upon which you present something. And you want to control the elements of what it is that you're presenting. And if it's something that feats President Obama, or if it's something, what are you smelling your feet for?
When you said feats, I don't know.
F-E-T-E-S.
What an idiot, man. You bent over and smelled your feet?
Well, he said feats.
F-feats, as in celebrates.
I didn't know that.
You know something, man? You're distracting me. You're sitting here, you're smelling your feet.
It just reminded me.
When I said feats, it reminded you to what, to take a bath? If you have the right to present, you see, I don't even remember what I was saying, so.
No, go ahead, man.
I was saying if you have the right, if you're a stage worker, then you understand that what a stage is something upon which you present something. And you are stage managing, and you are producing. And so a stagehand, I would think, would understand, oh, you know what, we want it to look a certain way, and you guys might be in the shot, and you're wearing a George Bush shirt, would you take it off? And I would think the cat would do it as a professional.
Well, he still said it about his son's ship.
If it was about his son's ship, that's even worse. Then that means there's no reason not to take it off. No reason at all. Take it off for a few minutes while they're doing the show. Put it back on. You know? Wearing a George W. Bush. I mean, I know the guy loves his son, and he's proud of his son's ship, and he wants to wear that sweatshirt, and he will wear that sweatshirt. They were just talking about this guy wearing it because it might be in the shot. That's what I think. 877-876-PHIL, World Famous Phil Hendry Show. You know, they found 2,000 Japanese soldiers in a mass grave on Iwo Jima. Now, how did they have the time to bury all those guys? Well, they were. Well, we'll find out. Also, the Dr. Green Thumb comes up momentarily. 877-876-PHIL.
It's the Phil Hendry Show. Listening to the world famous Phil Hendry Show.
Hello, Dr. Green Thumb. Paging Dr. Green Thumb.
It is the Dr. Green Thumb report for this evening, this Friday night, Saturday morning in American country land place person thing. Anyway, an elementary school student in North Carolina took lessons he learned from a drug awareness program to heart last week by turning in his own parents for breaking the law, according to police. Yes! The fifth grader who attends an elementary school in Matthews, North Carolina, recently took part in a DARE program. That's the Drug Abuse Resistance Education Program at his school. The program, which was started in California in 1983, is intended to give children valuable skills for resisting the allure of drugs, gangs, and violence. The Matthews community has its own DARE officer who spreads the organization's message to three of the area's elementary schools, according to WBTV television in their report. Upon attending the DARE presentation, the 11-year-old student, who's not being identified, brought an undisclosed amount of marijuana cigarettes to school. The boy allegedly told a school safety officer that the drugs belonged to his parents. On Thursday, officers with the Matthews Police Department arrested the child's 40-year-old father and 38-year-old mother and charged them both with misdemeanor counts of marijuana possession and possession of drug paraphernalia. The child's parents were cited but not jailed pending their next court appearance. Social Services, however, has removed the 11-year-old and a sibling from the family home and placed them with relatives. WBTV spoke with the child's father, who told them he does not give drugs to his children. When asked how his child got the drugs, the father reportedly said it was no one's business. I'll tell you what, man, you just keep that in mind, you moms and dads that want to smoke the weed in front of your kids. They take your kids away from you, okay? So get a clue. Dr. Green Thumb. Poor medical marijuana patients in Colorado won't have to pay state marijuana registration fees or sales taxes on the pot they buy. The Colorado Board of Health approved a plan Wednesday to waive the $90 registration fee for indigent medical marijuana patients starting on December the 1st. Patients who want their fees waived will have to show that they meet other government standards for indigents, such as qualifying for food stamps. The Denver Post reports that poor pot patients, pardon the alliteration, also will have notations on their cards waiving sales taxes on the pot that they buy. A new medical marijuana law passed by state lawmakers this year calls for lower fees on indigent medical marijuana patients. A man in Uniontown, that would be PA, could tell something wasn't right, so he asked for the police help in determining if the marijuana he purchased was actually marijuana. Well, that's a very smart thing to do, sir. Ask the police. Always, always trust that the police will give you the right answer. Officers at the Uniontown Police Department said they received a call from a man late Wednesday night that left them a bit puzzled. Investigators said the man told them he'd purchased marijuana earlier in the day, but after smoking it, realized that he may have been sold a fake bag of the drug. Police said the man asked dispatchers to send an officer to his home so they could test it for him. The man told officers that he smoked the weed and it tasted nasty. Yeah. Officers went to the Millview Street home and said, no, that's the kind of stuff we smoke. No, they said when they determined the substance was not marijuana, but was an unidentified organic substance. Police Captain David Rutter said the incident is something he and his officers will talk about for months. The man's expected to face charges, though police did not say what those charges would be. What would those charges be?
I don't know, like, maybe almost possessing marijuana, except he got burned for oregano.
There you go. Maybe almost possessing marijuana, except he got burned for oregano. All right. In early Texas, a message between old friends who hadn't been in touch for a while led to a drug arrest after the recipient of the "So do you smoke weed" text turned out to be a cop. Amanda Williams is a reserve officer with the Early Police Department. That would be Early Texas, or Tejas.
Hello, my name is Dr. Green Thumb.
The Brownwood Bulletin reported Friday that Williams said she received the text message Tuesday asking about getting together to smoke some dope that the man had. Williams says she'd not spoken to the man in some time, and he did not know that she's a law officer. Williams let police know that she agreed to meet the man at a park. Early police and Texas troopers were on hand to detain the San Angelo man, who faces a marijuana possession charge. Early is 120 miles southwest of Fort Worth. Man accidentally dials 911. Police sniff out marijuana grow op in his basement. Dateline Vernon, British Columbia. Here's a good reason not to have 911 on your speed dial, especially if you have marijuana growing in your basement. A Vernon, British Columbia man found out the hard way when he accidentally hit 911 on his cell phone while the phone was in his pocket on Tuesday, the dumbass. He hung up, but following police protocol, an officer was dispatched and ended up doing a safety check of the house. During the check, the Mountie sniffed out weed growing in the basement and retreated to get a search warrant. Police later found 60 pot plants along with firearms, a stolen personal watercraft, and charges are expected against three men in their 20s because they're dumbass. Children sickened by pot cookies. Three Huntington Beach, California children were treated for vomiting and dizziness after eating marijuana-laced cookies given to them by a neighbor. Police say a parent of one of the children accepted the cookies from neighbor Jason Davis, unaware they contained cannabis, and put them aside. The parent's boy and his friends dove into the cookies later that afternoon and then went out to play. The children began to feel nauseous, dizzy, and lethargic, returning home. Davis, who does not have a medical marijuana card, called police when he found out the kids ate the cookies and went to the hospital. Police said no arrests have been made, but an investigation was continuing. I hope they put the guy in prison. And who's the parent? Oh, yeah, you know what? Wrong question to ask. Finally, driving high, LA reporters take weed and the wheel for science. If the city attorney asks you to smoke marijuana and perform a series of driving tests, do you refuse? Los Angeles Times columnist Steve Lopez and the KABC radio host Peter Tilden sure didn't. As California prepares to vote on a ballot initiative that would legalize medical marijuana next month, Lopez says that he had to, quote, take a hit here for science. As Lopez tells it in his column today, he was asked by the LA city attorney to help determine whether and how marijuana impairs driving. In light of the light, this story is too long, man, and it mentions Peter Tilden, and, you know, the only talented, I'm kidding, Peter, you're a good guy. All right, so that's the doctor, whatever the hell it is, report. We'll tell you why some airline passengers in New Zealand are upset with their flight attendants, whoopee, and why is 30 Rock still on the air when they don't get any ratings? Nobody watches it. I know that the network brass likes it, but nobody else does. 877-876-PHIL. I'd like to tell you just where I'm from.
Phil Hendry. Broadcasting from the shores of El Pacifico, Phil Hendry.
I don't know. Oh, because this is like the 9 millionth retelling of how Hitler almost got blowed up.
Yeah, man, every time they do this, they're doing about how Hitler almost got blowed up.
Yeah, I know. This is like the 50 millionth reenactment of whatever the hell this was when they blowed up Hitler in his bunker there. They blew up everybody but Hitler, man.
How many of these shows are they going to do?
I don't know. It's very popular ever since that Tom Cruise movie. All right, now look. This is the world famous Phil Henry Show, our number 877-876-PHIL. We take you back now to World War II, as long as we were talking about Adolf. This is strange, and yet it is, well, it's remarkable. It's a lot of things. Two mass graves that may hold the remains of up to 2,000 Japanese soldiers have been discovered on the island of Iwo Jima, one of the bloodiest and most iconic battles of World War II. And this is a report from the Japanese government. Now, there's a team of Japanese searchers. They've discovered 51 remains in two areas listed by the U.S. military after the war as enemy cemeteries, one of which could contain as many as 2,000 bodies. So this was discovered 51 remains in two areas, okay, that were listed by the U.S. military after the war as enemy cemeteries. Now they think there might be up to 2,000 bodies.
I don't understand, man. They're fighting in a war. How do they have time to bury all the people?
I don't know. I honestly don't know. Unless as the soldiers died, they at some point early in the battle, they collected their dead at some point and were able to put them into these large graves, you know?
Yeah, what if America did it?
Well, I mean, if America did it, but these are sites that were identified by the United States military as enemy cemeteries. Now, you'd have to swear how many Marines and Navy personnel to silence and never breathe a word, and why? You know? I mean, the Americans would have done exactly the same thing with those bodies that the Japanese did, which was basically put them in a mass grave. You know, officials at Japan's health ministry, which supervises search efforts on the remote island, confirmed the team's findings, but they could not immediately confirm the potential size of the mass graves or other details. The discovery of these remains would be one of the biggest breakthroughs in decades toward finding the bodies of roughly 12,000 Japanese who remain missing and presumed dead after the 1945 battle on the island, which has been renamed Iwoto by the Japanese government.
What is it?
Iwoto.
As opposed to Iwo Jima?
Yeah. Used to be Iwo Jima, now it's Iwoto. Now, that's very interesting. If you've got 12,000 Japanese who are missing or presumed dead, there's a lot of family, and I don't know where this family is, how old they are, what generations of family, but there is a lot of family. They want to know where these men are. They want to know where their family member is. And if the last they heard he was on Iwo Jima and they have some positive identification that he died there, you know.
Well, where else is he going to be? I mean, do they think he's hiding out and everything?
Yeah, they used to do that, didn't they?
Some Japanese soldiers did hide out. They did.
Get out of here.
They did. There were two that I know of that they discovered in the 70s.
You're a liar now.
No, man, I swear to God, I read about it too.
They did. Swear to God, bud.
Well, what are you talking about?
There were two in the 70s, you can look up the names. The Japanese believed to surrender was dishonorable. They would never do it in a million zillion years. I mean, a lot of them did surrender. I mean, the guys that had their marbles about them, the screwy ones, the cats that were into that whole emperor worship thing, they killed themselves. But some of them went off into the jungle and continued to fight the war, literally.
Yeah, but you're talking about the 1970s. That's that's plus 10.
And 30 years, okay? Just about 30 years there. I did your math for you.
30 years!
Right, so they could have been, they would be men in their late 40s at least, early 50s, when they were finally found.
Man, that blows my mind.
It's weird. One of these Japanese guys, went back to Japan and became very famous. And both of these guys, as I remember it, were extremely popular with the Japanese public and the press. I mean, they were really heroes in a lot of ways. One of them didn't fare too well in civilization. The other one went on to get married, and I think he did very, very well. One of them had been spotted, and the way they found him is because he'd been spotted over a period of maybe a year. People had seen this guy, but they didn't exactly know where. And I think the Japanese finally went in. And it was in New Guinea or something like that, in a very, very heavily jungled area. And these guys would survive on stealing supplies from locals. They would sabotage things as they saw, you know, that they could sabotage. I mean, these cats continued to fight the war for 30 years, man. It's insane, you know.
Yeah, but what did they eat and everything? They just stole it and everything like that?
Yeah, look at this. Lieutenant Hiro Onada, he was found holding out in the Philippines in 1974.
Man, 1974, and he was a lieutenant, huh?
Yeah, he was a lieutenant, so that means, let's figure out, a guy makes lieutenant, he got to be 23, 24 maybe? 30 years, you know, he's in his 50s. He was found holding out in the Philippines. So I don't think there's any of those guys left now. There's just none, and there can't be. But there are 12,000 men who were last reported on Iwo Jima, and they don't know where they are. Because the Japanese, there were no survivors, you know.
Well, I mean, didn't they have nobody pick up on a dog tag?
There was nobody survived, man. Do you understand? I mean, the cats that survived were just single individual soldiers. They weren't responsible for getting dog tags. They didn't know nothing. And half of these guys blew themselves to bits in the caves there with those hand grenades, like in the movie. Remember we saw the movie that night?
Yeah, they held a hand grenade and blew their guts up.
Exactly. Anyway, so the island was seen as key to the United States because it had early warning radar and three airfields used by the Japanese fighter planes that posed a threat to U.S. bombing raids on Tokyo and Japan's main islands. The U.S. wanted the airfield for its fighter escort planes. So virtually, and here's the news, virtually all of the 22,000 Japanese soldiers tasked with defending the rugged volcanic crag were killed in the battle.
So there's nobody left.
There was nobody left, man. I mean, virtually all, which became a symbol and a rallying point for the United States in the Pacific when they put the flag on Suribachi, you know, where those guys push it up.
What's that?
The picture that I showed you, the guys pushing the flag up.
That's there?
That's on Iwo Jima, yeah. It's called Mount Suribachi.
Where's that?
What are you guys? Are you nuts or something?
It's on that Mount Iwo Jima.
It ain't Mount Iwo Jima, man. It's an island called Iwo Jima.
Oh, okay.
And that's Suribachi's on the island, okay? And that's where the flag went up with the guys pushing it up? That picture you saw?
Oh, yeah, okay. I thought that was Vietnam.
That wasn't Vietnam. I told you, that was Iwo Jima. Anyway, the battle claimed 6,821 American Mount Iwo Jima.
Well, I didn't know.
The battle claimed 6,821 American and 21,570 Japanese lives. Wow. Dozens of remains are recovered every year, but about 12,000 Japanese are still classified as missing in action and presumed killed on the island, along with 218 Americans. So there's 218 Americans. And one of the things about missing in action, I learned this, it's a very tragic thing, but if you know that a guy is in a jet, and the guys that came back from Vietnam would say this, if you knew that your friend was in a jet and you saw that jet get hit with a missile and blown to bits,
yeah,
unless you can recover some of those remains, that guy is technically missing.
So you can't say he killed in action.
You cannot call him KIA unless you can recover some of his remains, unless it can be proved that the remains of that man have been recovered. You might have seen that guy blown out of the sky, but unless you've got his remains, he is missing in action. And I don't know how many soldiers in Vietnam were classified as missing in action who were the victims or who met that kind of an end. But that, you know, that's a significant number of guys. So anyway, the fighting began in February of 1945. It ended March 26th of 45. Japan surrendered in August, blah, 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 blah. According to the Kyoto Report, searchers dug near a runway at the base used by the Japanese military, the only full-time inhabitants of the island, and at the foot of Suribachi. It said the operation began early this month based on information from the U.S. National Archives. The report said the main site is estimated to have 2,000 bodies, and the Suribachi site, 70 to 200 bodies. That's still not everybody.
If they're missing 12,000 guys, they've got a long way to look.
Yeah.
You don't think they took off?
Who?
Well, I mean, like 8,000 guys, they ain't hiding out.
8,000 guys hiding out on a volcanic island? I don't think so, man.
Well, but what about that one guy, Hoodoo?
Hoodoo? You mean Haru Onada, that guy?
Yeah.
He was in jungle, man. He's in thick jungle in the Philippines. Big difference. Big difference. Iwo Jima is a volcanic rock. There's nowhere to hide. There's tunnels. But what the hell? I mean, what are they doing? That's Japan.
Yeah, but they're hiding from the Americans, see?
Yeah, but that's Japan. We gave it back to Japan. We didn't take it from them. We gave it back to them. What are they hiding out from Japan? They're hiding out from their own people if they're hiding on Iwo Jima.
Well, maybe they didn't know.
What do you mean they didn't know?
There are a lot of Japanese Americans and stuff, and maybe they thought,
will you get out of here, a lot of Japanese Americans? What, they're seeing some Japanese Americans? And so they thought that, oh, well, better not, that's a Japanese American?
Well, it could be.
What if he's wearing a Japanese uniform?
You don't know, man. You're always talking about how you got to be careful, and you always got to know your sources, too.
Robert, look, if I see a Japanese guy wearing a Japanese uniform, the first thing I ain't going to think is maybe that's an American trying to fake me out.
You ain't Japanese.
Well, that's true. I ain't Japanese. You're right. And I ain't you either. But I bet you right now, as I sit here, I think more like a Japanese guy than you do.
That was the name of the guy, though, right?
No, man. It ain't you do. It's Hiru Onada. 877-876-PHIL. Forget it, man. PhilHenryShow.com, too. Lindsay Lohan is back in rehab. Yeah. But will she be able to afford it? Who cares? No, I do. I care, Lindsay. We'll be back. World famous Phil Hendry Show.
It's the Phil Hendry Show.
You don't know if he's Japanese, though. I can tell a Japanese guy.
The world-famous Phil Hendry Show.
This other guy was named Sergeant Soichi Yokoi, a Japanese Imperial Army straggler who lived in the jungles of Guam for 28 years after World War II, died in 1997 of heart failure at Nagoya, Japan. He was 82. He lived in a tunnel-like underground cave in a bamboo grove until January 24, 1972, when he was discovered near the Talifol River by hunters. Yokoi, who'd been a tailor's apprentice before the war, being drafted in 1941, made clothing from the fibers of wild hibiscus plants and survived on a diet of coconuts, breadfruit, papayas, snails, eels, and rats.
For 28 years?
28 years, man. There ain't an American. I ain't saying our soldiers aren't great. I'm not saying that at all. But there's no way any cat's going to do that. Forget it, man. I'm turning myself in. Eels, rats, and snails for 28 years. We Japanese soldiers were told to prefer death to the disgrace of getting captured alive, Yokoi told the press in 1972. The only thing that gave me the strength and the will to survive was my faith in myself, and that as a soldier of Japan, it was not a disgrace to continue on living. Yokoi said in 1986, no one in the history of humanity except stragglers later discovered in the Philippines has equaled his record. Few have struggled with loneliness, fear, and self for as long as 28 years. Wow, that's heavy. Of course, this is Guam. This guy's hiding out on an island. On an island that the Japanese soldiers committed atrocities on. Murdering the civilians on Guam. So, you know, I don't know.
Yeah, but somebody must have hit at him and stuff.
What do you mean somebody must have hit at him?
Somebody must have given a hand at the beginning.
I don't know, man. But, you know, let's not forget that the Japanese were just a cut above the Germans when it came to civilians. I mean, they didn't care. It was all about the emperor, them, bowl of rice, and whatever. All right. Judge orders Lindsay Lohan. I'm kidding about the rice thing. I'm sorry. That was very racist of me. I shouldn't have brought that up while talking about a guy that murdered Guam civilians. Now, anyway, judge orders Lindsay Lohan to return to rehab. She fears she can't afford more rehab, says report. Lindsay Lohan has been ordered to return to rehab after failing a drug test in connection with a DUI-related arrest 3 years ago. This woman is in big trouble, and that big blabbermouth of a father of hers. The troubled actress arrived at a Beverly Hills courthouse around 8 a.m. Friday morning to find out if she could go back to jail or rehab. L.A. Superior Court Judge Eldon S. Fox ordered her to return to rehab until January the 3rd. She's due back in court in late February. You're an addict. I hope you understand that, Fox told Lohan during the hearing. You're staying past the New Year's. There's a reason for that. What? Yeah. He added after telling the actress that he would not be manipulated by her. He also said he was giving her a final chance to stay clean. Or else what, man? You know, this is a snapshot, folks, of the system that we send people who have this biochemical problem through. I'm not complaining. I'm just saying it's a tough problem and we got to get it figured out. But look at this. This woman is well known to us. So we know she's going back. Then she goes to rehab. Then she went into jail. Now she's back in court. Then she's going to rehab. And she can't afford it, so what are we going to do? Put her in jail? Lohan's probation report obtained by RadarOnline.com, which I know has nothing but the very best interests at heart for Lindsay Lohan, says the actress admits to feeling powerless about being an addict and that she needs to work on her issues to save her life. You got that right. The powerful report was prepared by Lindsay's probation office. You know, you don't have to be a brain surgeon, folks. You know, it's a very interesting thing. As long as this crap is dumped on our front lawns, and that's really what this kind of news is. It's just crap. Whether we want it or not, in the middle of trying to find out whether the world is still spinning, in the middle of trying to figure out whether houses are getting sold, whether people are getting employed, whether industry is back up on its feet, we hear about this, don't we? And then we're told, well, it's none of our business. Well, if it's none of my business, why do you cats keep wanting me to buy it? So they tell me all about Lindsay Lohan, and she's got this problem. Well, you know, you don't have to be a brain surgeon when you listen to this woman's life to know she has, and I don't know about the mother, but this father is at the very center of this woman's problems. He's a manipulative, egocentric. He probably has used those children for his own ends all of their lives, turning them into shells, you know, chasing his love as daddy tries to promote himself on this planet. And he continues to do this. You can just tell listening to this guy's voice, watching him operate. He talks about, it's nobody's business. It's my family. You know, why don't you shut up then, man? How about that? You want me to understand you? You're long past getting me to understand you. You want me to hear your side? You want me to understand what's going on with Lindsay? You ain't the guy, man. You ain't the guy to tell me the story. Your big fat mouth has got more people hating your guts. You better find yourself a spokesperson. Get yourself a public relations or whatever. Because your big fat mouth, man, nobody wants to hear from you anymore. The powerful report was prepared by Lindsay's probation office. It contains information from several of her caregivers and gives strong insight into what the troubled actress has been dealing with. The report, relelaying information from one of Lindsay's doctors, reads, quote, the defendant was motivated to look at some of the problems in her life. However, there was some denial regarding her drug addiction. He feels that the longer the defendant is at the Betty Ford Center, the better. So she's probably saying her dad this, her dad that, and it is your dad. But you got an addiction problem, too. He believes the defendant needs to continue to work on her issues in order to save her life. He indicates the defendant is a wonderful young woman. What issues? If she's got one issue, she's using drugs. That's number one. Number two, when she cleans up, is kick her old man to the curb. Lindsay told one of her caregivers that she cannot remain at Betty Ford because she's broke. Phil Hendry then said, I'll lend her the money. As he leapt to her defense, no. Then it says here that according to the report, she indicates she cannot afford to continue to pay for the treatment program and she needs to work. The defendant stated her clothing line is falling apart because she's not available to monitor the product. Lindsay also told them she's scheduled to start shooting a movie November the 10th. She's got to earn some money. The report reveals that Lindsay is in a group geared toward improving self-esteem at Betty Ford and that she's also in group therapy and AA meetings. One probation officer spoke to Lohan by phone. She said, I feel good. Her pleas to get out of Betty Ford, the probation report says she's doing well and recommends she be kept there despite her pleas. Good. Keep her ass there then. But I thought she needs to make money. Well, if you guys don't mind her being there for free. The probation officer feels that it's a positive step that the defendant has acknowledged her addiction and is seeking additional treatment. Possibly removing herself from her lifestyle and its pressures for an extended period, exactly what is needed to preserve her health. You know what? No kidding, man. I mean, we were saying this stuff months ago while we were being forced to read this card. Nobody's forcing me to read it, understand? I got to read it, though, because it is of public interest. And why is it of public interest? Because they made it public interest. Radar Online did.
Where's that story? I want to look at that.
Right here.
Where is she now?
Betty Ford, out in the desert.
Where's that?
Out in the desert. Palm Springs, Palm Desert, La Quinta, some crap like that. World famous Phil Hendry show produced by Jason Rentz. Technical director Charles Wigan. Our associate producer is Dan Northcraft. Thank you all. See you Monday. And don't forget, Sunday night Phil, Sunday night at 6 on philhendryshow.com.
Phil Hendry.